We're in lesson number 43 in the book of 1 Samuel. And we are right in the middle of listening to some of David's music and what he's writing at this time. You see, David is under great distress. He is on the run from Saul. His wife has let him out the window. He has run to Samuel at the school of the prophets there in Naanoth and Ramah. Saul has showed up. David is on the run. He's gone off. And David recounts what he's a musician, and he writes all this music, and we know about it because it becomes the hymn book, basically, of the nation of Israel. And Saul and David is running, and we read through Psalms number 4 and number 5 in last week, and I want to pick up with the rest of the music that he wrote here between chapters 19 and 20 in the story of 1 Samuel. We're going to be opening our Bibles to chapter 20, but right here I want to go on to Psalm number 11 that David wrote. Psalm number 11 and then Psalm number 59. Are part of this little package of psalms that David is writing between here, running out to away from Saul, who's at the school of the prophets, as we spoke. So here it is, Saul, David's music in Psalm number 11. For the choir director, a psalm of David. I trust in the Lord for protection. So why do you say to me, fly like a bird to the mountains for safety? The wicked are stringing their bows and fitting their arrows on the bowstrings. They shoot from the shadows at those whose hearts are right. The foundations of law and order have collapsed. What can the righteous do? But the Lord is in His holy temple. The Lord is still rules from heaven. He watches everyone closely, examining every person on earth. The Lord examines both the righteous and the wicked. He hates those who love violence. He will rain down blazing coals and burning sulfur on the wicked, punishing them with scorching winds. For the righteous Lord loves justice. The virtuous will see His face. I wish we had time to go over every part of this, but we'll do that when we get to the book of Psalms and go through every Psalms. Right now, we're just hearing what David's heart is saying in between chapter 19 and chapter 20 in the book of 1 Samuel. And we move on to what he says here in his next song that was number 59. For the choir director, a psalm of David regarding the time Saul sent soldiers to watch David's house in order to kill him, to be sung to the tune of Do Not Destroy, whatever that tune is. Rescue me from my enemies, O God. Protect me from those who have come to destroy me. Rescue me from these criminals. Save me from these murderers. They have set an ambush for me. Fierce enemies are out there waiting. Lord, though I have not sinned or offended them, I have done nothing wrong, yet they prepare to attack me. Wake up, see what is happening and help me. O Lord, God of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, wake up and punish those hostile nations. Show no mercy to the wicked traitors. They come out at night, snarling like vicious dogs as they prowl the streets. Listen to the filth that comes from their mouth. Their words cut like swords. After all, who can hear us? They sneer. But Lord, you laugh at them. You scoff at all their hostile nations. You are my strength. I wait for you to rescue me. For you, O God, are my fortress. In His unfailing love, my God will stand with me. He will look at me down in triumph on all my enemies. Don't kill them. For my people soon forget such lessons. Stagger them with your power and bring them to their knees. Because of the sinful things they say, because of the evil that is on their lips, let them be captured by their pride, their curses, and their lies. Destroy them in your anger. Wipe them out completely. Then the whole world will know that God reigns in Israel. My enemies come out at night, snarling like vicious dogs. As they prowl the streets, they scavenge for food, but go to sleep unsatisfied. But as for me, I will sing about your power. Each morning I will sing with joy about your unfailing love, for you have been my refuge, a place of safety when I am in distress. O, my strength, to you I sing praises, for you, O God, are my refuge, the God who shows me unfailing love. David is crying out to God for all of his enemies, of Saul and the men that he sends to kill him, for him to rescue him and to care and take care of them. Three sets of messengers had been sent to Naoth to retrieve David for King Saul. Each set was changed when they arrived by the Holy Spirit and began prophesying the revealed word of God. David and Samuel surely knew that Saul would come shortly behind them. Well, when his messengers did not bring David to him, they knew that David what Saul was going to do. And so David was smart enough to leave Naoth before Saul arrived. In telling us this, the writer begins to give a summary of Jonathan's covenant with David and the plan of concerns of David and Jonathan. Chapter 20 and verse number 1. Then David fled Naoth to Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life?" He said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing either great or small without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Yet David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight. And he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death." Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." What is clear in this passage is the fact that Saul had planned for the death of David and that he did not share that plan with his son Jonathan. In addition, Jonathan is dead set on protecting David if, in fact, David is correct about Saul. In this passage, we see the wonderful covenant of love and friendship between Jonathan and David. And David felt so assured in his relationship that he sought out the son of his enemy, his brother-in-law, to seek help. Well, with Jonathan, David posed a plan for the new moon celebration, and David's plan is to allow Saul to reveal his heart to Jonathan. We hear about that, chapter 20, verse number 5. So David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I ought to sit down to eat with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field until the third evening. If your father misses me at all, and then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, because it is the yearly sacrifice there for the whole family.' If he says, 'It is good,' your servant will be safe. But if he's angry, know that he has decided on evil. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there is iniquity in me, put me to death yourself. For why then should you bring me to your father?" Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. For if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you about it?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" And Jonathan said to David, "Come, and let's go out into the field." So both of them went out into the field. The new moon occurs on the first day of each month. The calendar of the whole Old Testament is based on the lunar year. The lunar year consists of 12 months. Each month starts with the appearance of the new moon. In God's perfect creation, the first month of each lunar year has exactly 30 days. Each odd month has exactly 30 days. Each even month, the second month, and each even month thereafter has exactly 29 days. The accuracy of the lunar year has never faltered. It has never changed. Each lunar year has exactly 354 days. Just for knowledge's sake, long after the Old Testament, after the end of Malachi, the Romans will become the prominent nation in the world, and they will attempt to make a change from that strict lunar calendar over to a calendar that is timed by the sun. And the way they will do it is they'll do a semi-lunar, semi-solar calendar to try to make it, and it is a mess. Other nations also will attempt the same thing, and they will all fail. Finally, in the, and they'll all fail miserably for about 300 years until the time of Julius Caesar. Okay. So in doing so, time of Julius Caesar in the year 708, which is the Roman year, or about 600 years as you retrofit it after this, okay? Okay. They'll retrofit that name after about 600 years to be called 46 B.C. It wasn't 46 B.C. when Julius Caesar did it. It was year 708, okay? 708. That's on the Julian calendar. And they're going to start the calendar on March the 1st of year 709. They're doing it in 708, but they're going to decree it to happen. But it's not going to happen until March the 1st of 709, the Roman year. 600 years later, it'll be called 45 B.C. Okay, March was the first month of the year in the calendar. February was the last month. This is the reason why every Caesar that comes along and names a month after himself wants exactly 31 days, because of the other Caesars have 31 days. So they take a day from the month of February, and because February is last, okay? And so that's the reason February to this day has fewer days in it than all the rest of the months. All right. This February has fewer days. That's it. Thus, okay, to this day, we're on a solar calendar because of Julius Caesar. But the Bible is not on the solar calendar, except in a few portions of the New Testament where it's talking about the 15th year of Tiberius. Those are Roman years, but the rest of the New Testament's all on solar years. I mean, on lunar years. Okay, so this all gets changed. Okay, so that happened in 45 BC, 709 on the Roman calendar. They start March the 1st. On Sunday, the first day of the year, and March the 21st, which is the spring equinox, which is the one they can catch, and they know exactly where it is, it occurs on Wednesday. Caesar Augustus, who is going to become the Caesar and be the Caesar at the time of the birth of Jesus, comes in power about 27 years later, 18 years after Julius Caesar. He would discover there's been a hiccup, by the way, in the way the calendar's been going, because and there's 10 extra days there that should not be there. They're going to have to get rid of them. Yeah, he makes the plan. He does it over this period. All right. Now, in 1582, his plans, Caesar Augustus' plan, is still wrong. And so Pope Gregory comes along, and he's going to have to adjust it. They've got another 10 days. They've got to keep it out to keep the spring equinox about the 21st of the month. So that's what happens. All right, so we know when all this is taking place with Jesus being born and all that, because they're basically on the same calendar we are within 20, 21 days. Now, I've gone a long way around to make the point that in the New Testament, when Roman events are named with a yearly date, such as Tiberius, 15th year Caesar, that is on the Roman year, not the lunar year. When in the New Testament a reference is made to a Jewish date, such as Passover, that is on the regular, original, strict lunar calendar that the Jews have always been on, not ours. With that interesting sidebar, we come back to David and Jonathan. They were talking together on the last day of the month of the lunar year. The next day would be the new month and begin a new lunar year. The new month began with great festivities every time. A special offering was made by the priest. The trumpets were sounded, all in accordance with the law over in Numbers chapters 10:10 and 28:11 through 15. And because David says to Jonathan, it is the yearly sacrifice for the whole family. We know that this is a new moon, is the first of the month, of the first month of this new lunar year. So at the beginning of each new lunar year, a yearly sacrifice for the whole family is required. And in David's day, it is simply called the first month. Okay? All months were known by their number in order. This is the first month. Now, whenever Israel goes over into Babylon in exile, they're going to pick up the Babylonian calendar names and they're going to insert them on the Jewish calendar names, and we have them to this day. We have them to this day. Nisan, you've all heard the name Nisan for the first month of the religious calendar. Tishri is the seventh month. Those are Babylonian names inserted on our Jewish calendar that our Jews today are using. That was done on the religious calendar, not the civil calendar. Therefore, This story is occurring at the beginning of Nisan. Eventually, and evidently, Saul had established the traditions for a banquet on the day following the day of the new moon for his court, not a required festival. No instruction for the Lord was given for this banquet. It is evidently all Saul's idea, but it must have occurred enough times that David knew the habits of King Saul, and that he would expect his whole court to be at the banquet on the day after the new moon day. So from the day before the new moon until the day of the banquet consists of 3 days. Now, by the way, the day they were speaking and planning, the day of the new moon and the day of after the new moon comes up with 3 days. Now, here it is. In all the Bible scripture, any part of a day is counted as a day. David was not looking ahead when he said 3 days. He was counting the day he was in, and adding 2 days would take him to the day after, which would be the third day. Any part of this day is a day, even if it's in the last of the afternoon, then there's all day tomorrow, then it's any part of the next day, it's a third day. Such was the case when Jesus was on the cross. He was buried on Friday, late in the day, yet still in the tomb on day one. He was in the tomb on the Sabbath, day two. He was resurrected early Sunday morning, day three. Not even the whole day, but still the third day. All of Israel counted days in the same manner all the way through to the book of the Revelation, which will not even be written for more than 1,000 years later after this point in the story. At each yearly sacrifice for the family all joined together. It was a good excuse for David not being at the banquet. But more than that, David trusted Jonathan enough that if he found out from Saul that his deeds were not evil, David gave Jonathan permission to kill David. But Jonathan responded to David with the promise that if he found his father to be evil indeed, David, he would tell David all about it. Now notice David's answer, that promise with a question. Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly? In other words, David was asking who would be able to get Jonathan's message to David without putting Jonathan in harm's way. Who could they trust? Well, Jonathan came up with a plan. So the writer tells us of the plan of the covenant with Jonathan and David. That's Jonathan's plan. It involves the two going into the field and laying out the plan. Here it is in this chapter, chapter 20, verse number 12. They're out in the field. Then Jonathan said to David, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if there is a good feeling towards David, shall I not then send to you and make it known to you? If it pleases my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord, that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies." Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. All right. In the plan, Jonathan first sets the parameters for when he speaks with his father. It will be about this time tomorrow or maybe the third day. As we have already stated, the two were talking on the first day out in the field. Tomorrow will be the second day and the new moon. The third day will be the day after the new moon. And Jonathan is doing what we all tend to do. He is going to give himself 2 days to speak with his father. He will be looking for the right time and the right place to broach the subject with Dad. Not too soon, not too late. Nevertheless, in his plan, he is making the promise that he will speak to his father by the end of the third day, even if he has to force the scene to question his father. Second, Jonathan promises to get the word to David regardless of whether it is good or bad. He tags an interesting clip onto the end of this promise when he says to David concerning his father, saying, "If there is a good feeling toward David, shall I not then send to you and make it known to you? If it pleases my father to do you harm, may the Lord do to Jonathan and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away that you may go in safety." What is Jonathan saying here? He is saying that if his father intends evil on David, he will protect David by stalling his father, even if it means allowing his father to take his own life, Jonathan's own life, in anger. Third, Jonathan says, "If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord, that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even if the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." Again, what is Jonathan saying to David? He is saying that if his father does not kill him as a result of the exchange, will David continue to love him in their covenant relationship? In addition, Jonathan asked David to be kind to his children and his children's children, even if he survives, but his father pursues David to try to kill him. In other words, Jonathan was asking David not to destroy his family because of what his father will try to do to him. Fourth, Jonathan does not let his father off the hook. He said to David, "May the Lord require it of the hand of David's enemies." In other words, Jonathan was saying, "David, do what the Lord tells you to do with my father. If he is your enemy, but please do not harm my family because my father is your enemy." Finally, Jonathan expresses his love for David that began on the day David killed Goliath. It was the reason for this covenant with David. With the covenant renewed by Jonathan, let's set the plan for the safety or danger. The plan is for Jonathan to shoot arrows into the field they are standing in on this day before the new moon. Verse number 18. Then Jonathan said to him, "Tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be emptied. When you have stayed for 3 days, you shall go quickly down and come to the place where you hid yourself on that eventful day, and you shall remain by the stone Ezel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side, as though I shot at a target. And behold, I will send the lad, saying, 'Go find the arrows.' If I specifically say to the lad, 'Behold, the arrows are on this side of you, get them,' then come, for there is safety for you and no harm, as the Lord lives. But if I say to the youth, 'Behold, the arrows are beyond you,' go, for the Lord has sent you away. As for the agreement of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." Jonathan is just summarizing the plan in his mind and that of David's. David is to miss the new moon feast. We already know that the excuse Jonathan will give for his absence is the yearly sacrificial family sacrifice. But on the third day, the day after the new moon feast, David is to hide by the stone Ezel past the field in earshot of Jonathan. Now here the Hebrew word Ezel means the stone of departure. It also can mean the stone of entry. In other words, it's the place you go in and out. It was a large stone, and perhaps it was a heap of stones at the entrance to this field. To enter the field, you went by the stone. To leave the field, you went by the stone. It was a safe place for David to hide just on the other side of at the entrance to the field. It was a great place for him to hide there on that third day. It was far enough away from Jonathan to shoot the arrows safely and have a boy run out to retrieve them. As the boy was running to them, Jonathan could signal David with the instructions to the boy that the arrows are on this side of you, beyond you, or this side. That was the signal that David would be safe from Saul. Beyond you. Beyond you means David is not safe with Saul. But either way, Jonathan assured David that their covenant would last forever, and the Lord was his witness. Just as Jonathan planned, the writer states that David was to hide in the field and let the plan work its work. And he tells us that in verse number 24. So David hid in the field, and when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. And the king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. And then Jonathan rose up, and Abner sat down by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not speak anything that day, for he thought, "It is an accident. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean." It came about the next day, the second day of the new moon, that David's place was empty. So Saul said to Jonathan, "My son, why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal either yesterday or today?" Jonathan then answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, for he said, 'Please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now, if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away, that I may see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table.'"